Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. And I just have to say that there are so many great shows on Heritage Radio Network. One of my favorite ones, outside of my own, of course, is the Beer Sessions Radio with our brother Jimmy. And, you know, he's been doing it quite a bit longer than I have. But for some reason, he's never had a keg in the studio. So I can't believe I totally beat him to putting a keg in the studio. Of course, ours is filled with one of my favorite cocktails. And thankfully, the boys from Donna brought that into the studio today. We've got Matt Leaf and there we go, and Jeremy. Welcome back.
Never
to the
break that out, but
thank
we have to.
Us.
Oh, that's totally appropriate, Jack.
It's good to be here, man.
Yeah, it's great to have you guys back, man. You guys, well, first of all, thank you so much for bringing in a keg cocktail to the studio. That's just super baller.
That's the whole reason we started doing it at the bar in the first place. It's just so we can,
so
bring
you can travel
it
with it
right now.
Yeah. Just so we could bring it to you.
Nice. Well, that's amazing. That's badass. And you know what? I know you guys have had like a little rocky pass recently. And so to come back super strong like that, that's huge, man. So, I mean, let's talk about the elephant room, man. I mean, like you guys had an issue and now you're back.
Yeah, it was a very difficult year. But I think that now we're about 6 weeks into service again, and more than anything, I think we're just grateful to be back. And we actually were able to use the experience, which was a fire. We had a fire in November, to make improvements to the space that we wouldn't have been able to make otherwise.
See, I think that's interesting. And I want to hear more about that. And I was wondering about it, if there were, when you had the fire and then you had to like rebuild, and like what were some of the improvements that you got to make?
Well, you know, it's like those, when you build a bar, I think you have this idea of what the space is going to be. And then what ends up happening is that your customers are going to tell you something a little bit different. Like they might want something different than you're initially prepared to service. And then that being said, too, you've also already spent all of your money, so you're not going to be fixing anything right off the bat. So,
well, also, I think like the actual physical space dictates a lot of what you can do.
Absolutely.
Able, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, at a certain point, so we had like issues with the air conditioning system that we had put in initially was just never strong enough.
Or not put in. The first 2 weeks, we didn't even have air conditioning in the bar being up, and we're like, we can't. It's like sweaty. It's like the jungle exhibit.
We spent so much time and money like insulating the room to protect from sound going to
our neighbors above.
That it also trapped heat. And so when that room was packed, that heat wasn't going anywhere.
The windows would fog up in the bar. Like,
yeah, just getting gnarly. On the
like in the summer, they're fogging up.
Yeah, exactly.
It was, you know, it was it, like, I loved it. And like we talked about it last time we were on the show, I just love the design of the place. And like, I remember that when you guys opened, and it really felt like you were like in Havana.
Yeah.
Well, literally from the temperature, it felt like you were in, closer to the equator.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I remember at one point, too, it got so bad that I ran to Chinatown and bought hand fans and distributed them to people. And then it was like,
awesome.
It was pretty amazing.
Well, then people had this like crazy fan dance party, and everybody's using them as props for, their, you know.
That's amazing, though. It's like, that's the kind of stuff, like, I don't think that a bar should ever be, like, perfect, you know?
I know, and it never will be, which is,
But, like, all those, like, you know, those inventions, they're born out of necessity.
Exactly.
Like, that's when, you know.
But that was what happened, like, when the fire first happened, the damage was not, like, some people are like, oh, I heard you guys got burned down. We didn't get burned down. We actually had really limited fire damage. We had a little more water damage because of the sprinkler system that put out the fire, you know.
I think the soundproofing put out the fire.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, that was the whole reason that there was a lot of damage in the first place, is because there's so much soundproofing and insulation in the ceiling that a bunch of firefighters with an infrared scope couldn't even see where the fire was in the ceiling because there's so much soundproofing. So they were just like punching holes randomly trying to figure out where it was.
Oh, man.
But we got to that point, and then we're like, okay, we're obviously not reopening tomorrow. So we're looking at the damage that was there, and we sat down and we're like, what? Okay, if we're going to have to rebuild anyway, what are the things that we has ever bothered us that we would maybe want to fix? And let's get it priced out and see if we can do it this time around. Maybe with the monies that come from the insurance, we can take that opportunity. And so we ended up doing that. And the major ones were just putting in ducted air conditioning, so like a fully blown system, and repouring the main bar so that the curvature of it was less dramatic than it used to be. Because when it used to bother me that people would just, it would just become a bottleneck.
It was like a trap. People would get sucked in.
I did notice that. I went there. Yeah, I noticed that last week after the show. I had the folks from the 12 Bottle Bar on, lovely people. And Nick, one of your bartenders, Nick Settle.
Yeah.
He studio bombed us. He might actually do it today.
I'm sure he knows that we're here. He knows that we're here.
I think he's holding down the shop today for you guys.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And then we went to Don afterward. It was my first time to be there since you guys reopened.
Yeah, yeah.
And the place still looks as lovely as ever. But I did notice I was like, is my memory just off, or is the bar actually different? So that's interesting.
Yeah. And it's been amazing. Just like the effect of that, you know, it's those little tiny subtle things that your average customer probably isn't going to notice.
Exactly.
What I notice now is that the bar gets full first. That never used to happen. People would sit in tables first, and then eventually the bar area would fill up, because I think the bar would just get too crowded because the shape was kind of, it was so tight. Mm-hmm. But now that's where people head to first, it seems.
We also kind of made it smaller, so now there's probably like two-thirds as many seats that fit there now, but it's more comfortable.
Yeah. Well, it's spread out. So what would happen if you're on the inside of a circle and you're at the point of the circle, the person who's standing next to you is actually behind you.
Right.
So
right.
That's an awkward way to have a conversation with somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
So we were able to fix it this time around, you know, and it's amazing. It's amazing to make, there's a psychology to architecture.
Absolutely.
And, people and spaces that are built out with that in mind. And if you can tweak little tiny things, it affects the way that people move in the space and the way that they enjoy themselves in it.
Yeah, I hate to bring it up, but you know, John Taffer from Bar Rescue, I still love watching. I love watching that show.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn from it.
It's a lot to learn. I mean, like,
Jeremy's wife has turned down that show, I think, 5 times now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, but the thing is, like, as someone who manages bars, you're managing every part of everything. You know, like, even if you're not the manager, as a bartender, you should be aware of everything that's going on in the place. And, like, there are certain little tweaks that he does in the show that, like you were saying, like, with the bar, it's, like, just making these, like, minor adjustments. They seem minor, but they're actually, like, huge.
Totally huge.
Getting the room opened up a little bit more so people can actually go to the bathroom.
Yep.
Like, and not fight their way through the crowd, you know?
Yeah.
I noticed that for sure, when I was at the bar again last week. Not that I was fighting and wanted to go to the bathroom or anything, but, like, I noticed how, like, more, it seemingly open the space was. And, like, it's a big, airy space, so you need to have, like, all the elements of that going along with it.
Yeah.
And I think it's, like, I was wondering why you guys were down for so long, but now I know. You know, it's like, it's cool to like take that time and be able to even.
Well, and you know, I think obviously there was those improvements that took some time, but ironically, like when people are like, well, what took so long? It wasn't even those improvements. It was the insurance. You know, if anybody has ever gone through an insurance process, you know, I mean, they would understand it takes an incredible amount of time. It was 2 months before their investigation was over.
Yeah.
And then another 2 months to settle, and then took us some time to rebuild.
You can't even clean up until the investigation is done. There were drinks, like half full drinks that people had been drinking that afternoon
There was a bucket of limes.
When the fire happened. Yeah, just
a bucket of limes the barback was prepping when the fire happened.
It was like a cutting board with a lime cut half into wedges for 2 months.
It was like walking into Pompeii or something.
Yeah, totally.
Frozen
in time.
You're like, that's what was happening when this went down.
Oh, man. Those people were getting Jeremy, you should call me, man. I would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah.
That would have been a really good photo, I say.
We took some pictures. Matt has some, yeah.
I have a bunch, yeah.
That literally sat there for 2 months.
We're going to be putting out a time-lapse video from the fire to the rebuild that should be done probably in another couple of weeks.
That'll be on your website.
Be on our website. Yeah.
It's Donna BKLYN.
That's right. .com. Yeah.
Cool. I can't wait to see that. That's awesome.
That'd be awesome.
We'll link that on the on our website.
Excellent.
And
cool.
Blast
Thanks.
It out.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy, man. I'm just thinking about like lime sitting on a cutting board for 2 months. Like, oh man, it gives me like a panic attack.
I couldn't even go into the space eventually. You know, after the first couple of weeks of like having to go there with insurance, you know, adjusters, et cetera, I just stopped because it was just depressing because you couldn't do anything about it, you know?
Man, I've had to deal with claims like when like my band's stuff got ripped off out of a car. But like, I mean, like I get really impatient with like, having no cash on me and buying a MetroCard with my debit card, you know, it's like, I feel like that takes forever. It's like, it sounds like the craziest nightmare, but the good news is that you guys are back.
That is. And I'm so grateful, man. I mean, there's nothing like going through something like this to be appreciative of having this business back again. And I love it. It's an incredible bar. I'm really proud of it.
It's an incredible bar. And it's absolutely like, it's beautiful. And you guys make awesome drinks. And like the vibe is always really amazing.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of bar that, like, you couldn't just, like, let it go.
Yeah.
Everyone was, like, talking about it. Everyone was behind you guys. Yeah. And, like, really supportive.
And when the fire happened, people were, like, I mean, people were so supportive. I spent, like, days just answering emails, like, you know, from people trying to help us. And people through fundraisers, like, within the week, you know, 3 or 4 different fundraisers. Our whole staff had jobs within, like, 5 or 6 days, I think.
Yeah.
That's another huge thing.
You know, like, everybody, I mean, we had so many job offers, and everybody was so...
And everybody got placed, and that was an amazing thing, you know, for the community.
All the way down to our porter.
Yeah.
Like, our porter, you know, got a job.
That's amazing. Isn't our industry amazing?
It is. It
was amazing.
There's more people offering jobs than we even had people to fill. Yeah. I had to write, email people back and be like, this is so great. Like, I love you. This is fantastic. Everyone is... too busy now. Like everyone is working as much as they possibly can.
Yeah. That was intense, man. And it was so good to see how supportive that community is.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. I say it all the time, but I'm just like so happy to see like what our industry has turned into. And
yeah,
like,
me too.
Yeah.
It's like the best life decision I ever made was becoming a bartender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I really feel it, you know, every day.
And we're in a special city for it too.
Absolutely.
Know? I mean, there's something really magical about this particular bar community, and we've been doing it for a long time.
Max, because we're the best. Well, you know, let's stop talking about the fire and all that. Although, like, the outcome is super amazing.
Yeah.
Let's take a break, and when we get back, let's have a drink.
Excellent.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Cool.
We'll be back in just a moment, talking with the guys from Donna.
National Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. And we have the guys from Donna in Brooklyn, New York, here in the studio today, pouring some... sorry, Jimmy, but yeah, the first kegger in the studio. But these are not... we're not pouring beers into cups. We're pouring some really amazing cocktails into the cups. And it's actually a riff. It's the... there was a classic... it's a classic cocktail, but... no one really knows about it, and it happens to be my favorite tiki drink. Actually, probably my favorite cocktail in existence, but it's got one of the most nondescript names. It's just called the Caribbean Rum Punch by Don the Beachcomber. So you've got the Donna's Caribbean Rum Punch.
You know, the fact that this is the first keg in the studio ever means we definitely need to have the first keg stand in the studio ever.
Oh, man. All right, Jack, somebody, up for that.
Yeah. Somebody has to get up on, and then do that.
He's looking in here like, right now?
In the middle of the
after
show?
After the show.
Yeah.
So I know we're pouring these out right now, so we should be talking about it, right?
Yeah.
So why don't you run us through it, Jeremy?
Well, so part of reopening, you know, one of the improvements we wanted to make was like the place gets really busy, so we wanted to sort of speed up service and have options that were easier for, you know, easier to serve to people, especially on the weekends. And we thought that, you know, changing some of our beer lines over to draft cocktail lines would be a fun way to do that and still be able to offer like really cool, interesting cocktails and stuff.
Like in a cocktail bar, I feel like the biggest complaint of cocktail bars is that drinks take too long, right?
Yeah.
And even that Eater article that came out recently, like the top 10 things, or, you know, how to build your own hipster bar. And it was like, you know, you pick like how long you want to wait for a drink, you know?
Yeah.
But the thing is that being able to do high volume drinks in a way that you could still stand behind the recipe is difficult, you know, because you want to be able to do large batches of things, but they need to be stable to an extent. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that they're batched by somebody who knows what they're doing, so it's consistent.
Well, also, there's a huge aspect of the experience that is like the presentation and the production of the show of the drink.
Sure.
And you lose that sometimes, and you have to kind of like shore yourself up. Like you have to make up for it with some other sort of like novel aspect to the guest, which is like, you know, plenty of places have done draft, like Manhattan's barrel aged Negronis, blah blah blah, and I've had some. You know, they're good and it's awesome, and it makes your life easier as a bartender. But when we were sitting down talking about the whole process and putting these draft lines in, and at first we had, I think, one that was set up for carbonation and two of them that were primarily nitrogenated, and I was like, we should. The carbonation is the cool part. Like that's the part that you can do that you can't do.
Yeah.
Normally, so you can carbonate the whole volume of liquid, and
you're also able to make, you're able to actually improve upon a cocktail.
Exactly.
Because of the consistency of the texture. So if you're like for instance, an Aperol Spritz, which we have on draft, which is maybe not the most fascinating cocktail on the planet, but still, when it's made well, it's delicious.
It's a great drink.
Aperol is more viscous and will float to the bottom of a drink. And the soda, because it's lighter, will float to the top. So the consistency of the drink is not the same from start to finish. If you carbonate the entire batch, it is consistent. You get these beautiful, tiny bubbles throughout. And
it's
Jeremy's riff.
Brownie in motion.
Yeah, exactly.
Mixing through carbonation.
Right. And then instead of just having a bunch of flat stuff topped off with sparkling stuff, that just goes flat right away, you've got this like bubbly thing all the way through, which just makes it really cool.
Why wouldn't you want that?
Yeah, and to me, this was also just like, hey, let's have a new toy. Let's play with this. Let's do something totally different.
I love
different.
Using my EC charger and putting like Blanc Vermouth in it and just charging Blanc Vermouth and spritzing it over some ice. That's one of my favorite things.
This is a totally different format. I'm starting to think of these things as like boozy sodas in a way. Of like, you know, cocktails that we're doing in a draft, and just trying to think of like totally different things.
Well, I mean, like, who doesn't like a fizzy cocktail? Seriously, just at the end of the day, it's like, you know, even with the, you know, having, say, like a barrel aged Negroni or a nitrogenized Manhattan on tap, it's like, all right, that's cool, man, but there's some fizz in that. Even Dave Wondrich said in Vibe, he was like, dude, you know what? You can top anything with champagne, and it's going to make it better.
Automatically.
Yeah, he's like, a Manhattan? It's great. You know what? Try throwing some champagne on top of that.
Exactly.
He actually said it in his book. You know what? I did it after that. I'd done it with Negronis, but I'd never done it with Manhattans. But then I did it, and I was like, that's why he's the man.
And then acid and all that stuff that comes from the carbonation like gives a whole other level of structure.
I think now we're finally at a point, especially, dude, this is like the craziest, awesome,
it's so good
on draft cocktail I've had ever.
Well, Matt and I were sitting around thinking, like, what do we do for the other drinks? And Matt's just like, why don't we love tiki stuff? Why don't we do a tiki cocktail?
That's amazing.
And then I had done an event with Brian way back in the day that Tiki Adam actually brought in the root beer for. Yeah, Brian Miller. Yeah. Back in the day, and this was one of the drinks, yeah. And immediately I was like, "Well, that's got soda in it. Let's do this one because then yeah. we can charge the whole thing." And who doesn't love root beer?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know? Come on,
it's like the weirdest drink. It's the platypus, like duckbill platypus of the canon. Like, there's root beer in it. Why? Like, it's one of maybe four Don the Beachcomber drinks that has anything carbonated in it at all.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's just like, how is there only one like this? Like, how does he just like, oh, you know, I got bored, so I put root beer in one of them.
Nah, he was a soda jerk when he was a kid, and it was like, it was something that he wanted to do to like go back to his soda jerk days. And it's like, but like, it's not just the sarsaparilla root beer that goes into it. It's like one drop of absinthe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like three
yeah.
drops of grenadine. Like mm-hmm. drops. Like what are your drops, man?
But
and like
when you take so a sip of it, there's stuff. All of this complexity yeah. that's going on. Like all those little additives really do create an incredible experience, you know?
Yeah.
It's one of those drinks where you take the first sip and you're not sure if you like it, and then you keep going back, and then 5 minutes later you realize it's gone. Yeah. You know? And then you're like, wait a minute, I think I really like that, you know?
Well, you guys have been really good about like causing a ruckus with like your really super tasty drinks. Like, I mean, I know we talked about it a little bit last time, yeah. but the Broncolata, I mean,
yeah, I mean,
come on.
Yeah,
it's just kind of the best drink.
Well, we put that
it's
in
kind
the,
of like a monster.
You have it in a frozen.
We go through like 30 liters of that on a Saturday night.
Yeah, it's just like,
you
spent,
can't even keep up with the mint that you know,
I didn't
even
see
with,
one yeah. of the barbacks. Like, there's one barback on the weekends who I don't even know if he comes to work all the time because he pretty much spends the entire shift in the basement batching frozen drink. And we probably sell more of that than any other cocktail on the menu. Like,
yeah.
half again. Like 50% more broncolatas than any other drink.
Well, what's great about that is before you were making them all minute.
Yep.
Yeah. yeah.
And we were talking about the production and the speed of everything. Also, you know, just you guys are fucking killing it right now. I mean, like, you've got, like, fizzy, draft, tiki drinks. And then the other one that's, like, super huge at your place, the broncolata. It's like, well, you know what, man? If I can get a fizzy giraffe cocktail, which everyone loves, it's like, throw in some Fernet Branca into a pina colada and put it in the frozen drink machine. Out here at Roberta's in the backyard, they have a frozen drink machine. And, I mean, they crush it.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
crush
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So people just love frozen drinks. You know,
people love frozen drinks
and
fizzy drinks.
Yeah, summertime. Exactly.
I mean, the original idea was we were going to try a whole bunch of different cocktails in there, but then people started to get really angry at us when we would ever change it out.
Yeah. So pissed.
Yeah. But like we did Americanos in that once for Natasha's birthday, my wife's birthday. But yeah, people get really angry because they come in there just for this one thing.
Yeah.
And they bring their family from wherever they're visiting. For this
seriously, like my uncle and aunt are in town. We're going to come and drink this frozen drink here. Wait, why isn't it that thing? I'm so mad.
Which is amazing to create that experience for people. Then well, you're like, this is what we're doing this for, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's
Donna's always tried to like ride the line between, you know, we take our beverage program super seriously, but we want it to be fun. We want it to be accessible. We want people to come in, be able to get a drink in their hand quickly and party, you know? And that's what this kind of the whole draft cocktail program has been about.
Yeah. I mean, Jeremy, your wife's place, Nightcap,
yeah.
I mean, it's one of my favorite, like Nick mm-hmm. calls it the Damon Bolte special. I'll come in and get a blanche of ourselves
yeah.
and then a sidecar of like a little tiny bamboo on draft.
Yeah, or a Pinot de Charente or something.
Or Pinot de Charente. Yeah, I get made fun of for that. But you know what?
Pinot de Charente. I love that.
It's delicious.
Yeah. But her, you know, she does the same thing in a different way. But
like
it's very
fun.
Serious, but super playful at yeah. the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you just know what you're doing, then you can have fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't like, you can't bullshit a bullshitter, you know? But I mean, like, that's so great. What's really amazing about that place is I remember when I first walked in there, I was like, it was kind of like intimidating in the way that I wanted to be intimidated, like just from the beauty of the actual architectural like elements of the place and the decor and everything. Like, I still don't understand what the weird like dotted circles are. Like with the tile in the bathroom, I'm just like, that seems like some sort of witchcraft thing,
yeah.
like some True Detective stuff. You know? But I love it. You know, we haven't even talked about like the food yet.
Yeah,
I mean, like, what are you guys doing nowadays?
Brooklyn Taco's coming back. They're coming back August 5th.
Yes.
Yeah, we love those guys, and it was such a good match for us. We knew that it was probably they weren't going to be able to come back on day one, and we weren't sure if we would be ready for them on day one because we wanted to, you know, try out our new bar and like figure it out first and make sure that even just like passageways for movement mm-hmm. behind the bar made sense. Now we're at that point and Brooklyn Taco is ready to get things going again. And,
cool, man.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's so cool. I mean, like, I think it's really important for businesses, and if you're in the same community of businesses, to be able to support each other.
Yeah.
And I think it's such a cool concept to, like, have them come in, like...
Totally.
And be working together with
it's, them. Dude, it's like having a taco truck, except they're
there's
inside.
There's no truck.
You know?
Yeah. There's no truck. Just tacos.
Yeah.
No truck, just tacos. Yeah.
It was just, like, fun, easy food that fit the vibe of the space.
And, yeah. You
know. What I always loved about it, too, is that it didn't turn Donna into a restaurant. You know, when we first had a food program in there, and it was a really beautiful food program that was created by Jessica Wilson, who's over at Dear Bushwick. Mm-hmm. It was, I think people walked in and they thought it was maybe a little higher, like a, more of an elevated dining experience than we were really prepared to give.
Right.
It was not sustainable, you know. So yeah. We went through a period where we kind of didn't have anything and we were like, well, what are we going to do? And so when I found Brooklyn Taco on the way to band practice, walking down Essex, they were in Essex Market, and I was like, Brooklyn Taco, I'd never heard of them. And I walked in, and I asked Jesse, the owner, I was like, where's your location in Brooklyn? He's like, oh, actually, we don't have one right now. I was like, you're Brooklyn Taco, and you don't have a location in Brooklyn? I was like, come to my bar, man, you know?
That's
and,
amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love Essex Market. It's where Heritage Foods and Saxelby Cheesemongers are as well.
Yeah, that's right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I'll pop in there, like, when I'm getting off the train to, like, go do bad things at St. Jerome. or go to Nightcap, rather.
Yeah. You know?
But, yeah, that's amazing, man. I'm really excited for you guys. It's so awesome that you're back and, like, just greater than ever, really.
Yeah, I mean, it really is.
Doing these really great drinks. I mean, and bringing kegs to the studio. I'm super thankful for that, you know, clearly.
Anytime, man.
Yeah.
Anytime.
And, you know, outside of the Cocktails on Draft, too, I just want to mention that Matt and Jeremy have put together a really impressive menu of our a la minute cocktails.
Absolutely, man.
That I've never been more pleased about our offerings now. And I just think it's awesome. I'm so happy when I walk in there now. You know?
I have to ask, what's up with all the old granddad bottles?
Well, before we closed on Mondays, and it's an industry party that we're actually going to bring back, we would have guest bartenders come in, and it was called Brooklyn Battles, and a guest bartender would come in with a cocktail of their creation, and they would kind of go up against one of our bartenders with one of their creations, and we would offer bottle service, but it was just like a fifth of old granddad,
it was like four, yeah, four,
the bonded, yeah,
yeah, four. Like Miller High Life's and then a little shorty bottle of old granddad.
And we'd have them sign the bottle.
Hall of Fame.
Well, I think the first person that did it, they drank it all and they were like, whoa, that was really a lot. That was way harder than I thought it was going to be. Yeah. So they're like, we have to like document this, that we did this. So they signed it and then we just like kept it around.
And it just didn't make sense to throw it away. So we just kept the bottles.
They're all up there covered with, we reclaimed them from the morass. Yeah. And we're like cleaning all these bottles off and Leaf was like, should we throw these out? It's like, I don't know. I think we should keep them. It's a part of the history now.
Yeah.
Part of
the and they're lore. Very proudly displayed on the top shelf. Yeah. Super. It's great to have such a like kind of bottom shelf whiskey way up on the top shelf and you're like 20-foot ceiling.
That's
you
right.
Know, like,
yeah.
Shelving. But guys, man, this has been great. It's great to have you back in the studio. It's
Thank
great
you for having you, us, Danny.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm really psyched for you guys. Everyone should check out Donna when you're in Brooklyn. It's DonnaBKLYN.com if you want to check out the website. And also check it out for your video that you were mentioning before.
Yeah.
And, man, and thanks again for bringing a keg into the studio.
Anytime.
Yeah. Yeah, really, really rad. Guys, again, wish you all the best of luck. I love going to that place and can't wait to be there again soon.
Hope to see you soon.
All right. Thanks. This has been an awesome show with the Speakeasy. Check out Heritage Radio Network for lots of cool shows and lots of cool people. Well, that's it for this week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.